Okay, good. So, sometimes in my position, making decisions, trying to get things done, trying to respond to the important things of our world, and sometimes you've come across so much negativity. It can't be done. Somebody is responsible. It won't work. It can't happen. This is wrong. And sometimes there's so much negativity in the world. Sometimes it's too easy just to get caught up in that stream of negativity. And sometimes that causes you to get depressed. It causes you to sometimes lose hope. Sometimes causes you to think, well, what's the point? Nothing's going to work. No one likes me. No one respects what I'm trying to do. Nothing works. This universe, this whole is being sucked into the black hole of negativity. I just saw a picture of a black hole. But when you saw that picture of a black hole just on the internet, supposed to be the first time they have a picture of a black hole. When I looked at that black hole, I never saw the hole. I saw this beautiful crown of brilliant light on the outside. It wasn't a black hole. To me, it was a ring of gold. It's amazing, just a little picture and you can see whatever you like in it. Why do people say black hole? Why do you think negativity? Why do you think it's not going to work? Years and years and years ago, when we first started out the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, how many years ago now? 1983, when I first came to this place. And it was 83, I think, maybe. Anyway, don't be negative, just believe and trust. So anyway, when I first came here, it's not an important thing to trust. Then I looked, we were in this really tiny house in North Perth, number 4 Magnolia Street. And that's all we had, it was just 3 rooms. The outside toilet, and just so tiny. And I asked the treasurer at the time, show us the accounts. And know what we had in the bank? A debt. $49,000. No, what we did? The house was worth $50,000 and we owed $49,000 or something like that. No equity at all. Oh my goodness, what's going to happen? Don't worry, she'll be right. And of course from there we got these huge monasteries and temples here, and even just that great story, the positive energy you needed just to get our nuns' monastery going. A nuns' monastery, that was really pushing the envelope, you know, in Buddhist terms and even just financial terms. And I love telling this story because it inspires me of just what's possible. Making the impossible a reality just because, you know, you have a dream. You have inspiration and you make it work. Where other people say you're a fool, you're foolish, it can't be done. So, even we're looking for a nice place for nuns' monastery. Here they're all over the place. We found a place on Reen Road in Gidgeganup. 30 acres. Only 30 acres. Now, of course, you think, hang on, it can't be 30 acres. Listen to the story. Okay, and oops, that when we went down to have a look, that's not good enough. So I was in the car saying, because we passed another place, 583 acres of beautiful solitude. And so what did we do? I said, let's have a look. It doesn't cost anything to have a look. And when you have a look, you realize that's the place. But we didn't have enough money. We didn't have enough money, but who cares? So I could still, I was still a, it's okay for me because I had a dual nationality, so I could always escape overseas in case everything went pear-shaped. I could still go back to Thailand and just, well, you know. Anyway, we bid. And it was much more than we could afford. We had our limit, 600,000, and we bid 650,000. And see what happened. Now we've got this beautiful nuns monastery. Getting nuns, how can you get nuns? Impossible. But we got them. How do we get them ordained? Impossible. But we ordained them. And all this time, there's something which comes up whenever there's something which can't be done. Why? Let's give it a try and make it happen. And of course, this whole Buddhist society here is built on that premise. Just making the impossible a reality, not negativity, and thinking it can't be done. Let's give it a try. So, all the time, you know, sometimes my predecessor, Ajahn Jacaro, you know, we used to sort of joke that he was the front car in the convoy. He got all the bugs on the windscreen, and I was just tailgating him. Now I am in the front and get all the bugs on my windscreen, and other people tailgate me. But it doesn't matter, I like bugs. We used to eat them in Thailand. That's all we had to eat. They tasted terrible, by the way. But you keep on going, because there's something inside of you which says, wow, why not be inspired? So how can we overcome that negativity? And it's something which I've noticed, that where you can have that dream, that positivity, that energy, which sees much more than things which go wrong. I mentioned it years ago in that simile, the two bad bricks and a wall. And you should all know that simile by now, because it's one of my favorite ones. I'm well known for it. Building a wall. I didn't have any money. Now remember this. In Thailand, as a monk, you're treated like almost like royalty. You don't have to do anything. In Sri Lanka, the same. Monks don't work. And even once, down in Bodhinyana Monastery in the early days, there was no one else to help wipe the dishes. So I went into the kitchen, started picking up a tea towel and wiping the dishes. You know what happened? I only lasted about 2 or 3 minutes. And a Buddhist came along, never said anything, just took the end of the tea towel and yanked it away. Ajahn Brahm, you should not be here. You go up over there. And so you couldn't even do this. Well, can I confess something? Can I confess that even last week, that when we were just, there was a tree which fell in the wrong place. So I got out the chainsaw, and carried his big heavy logs. Ajahn Brahm, you're not supposed to do that. What happens if you cut yourself and cut your foot off or something? You won't be able to come to Nala Mara. Oh, come, give me a break. I enjoyed that, bit of exercise and just doing something good for the monastery. And what happened, I was very careful this time, making sure no one had a camera and watched me. Because the last time I tried doing any work, people took photographs of me. I was up on Jhana Grove, on the roof of Jhana Grove, fixing up something on Ajahn Brahm, you should not go up on a roof. You're too valuable, you know, we don't want you to fall off. So it won't fall off. Well, even worse, you know, look at your size. You know, that was the rafters built to withstand such such a weight. I got told off for that. Get someone else to do that. So now I enjoy doing things like that. But the building bricks, hard, but you know, it's logical, just do it. It should be easy enough. Because, you know, just I had a degree in theoretical physics. I was smart. Laying bricks, that should be easy. But of course, what happened? Not as easy as you think. Life is not as easy as you think. Whatever you do, there's always problems and troubles, but what do you do? You know what I did? I found out there's two bricks which I'd missed were crooked. So you know what I wanted to do? This is where we learn. I wanted to blow the wall up, get a bulldozer and just push it over so I could start again and do it once more. Next time I can do it right. Just like many of you, you may get married or have a relationship, doesn't work out, so what do you do? Okay, next one, I'll do it right next time. I didn't do that. I said, okay, there's those two bad bricks in the wall, what am I going to do next? I suffered. Suffered. Because negativity means all you ever see is faults. You see the mistakes. You see the things which went wrong. You see your own failings and faults. You don't see anything else. And it was a wonderful experience. I got sucked into that negativity for about 3 months. You know what it's like when you're negative? You think, oh, why did I do that? Stupid. And you always you can actually go back in time and fix it up and do it right next time. And you know, you just wake up in the middle of the night, nightmares, didn't sleep well because you know I made a mistake and everyone could see it. We didn't have any money. Who would actually give donations? Because everything's done by donations. Who would give donations? The first thing you do is make a stupid, rotten wall. But after 3 months, that was when that fellow came along. I don't know who he is, whoever he was, sadhu, great teacher. He was the one who said, what a beautiful wall that is. And I said, you must be crazy, you must be mad, you must be blind. You need your prescription on your glasses checked. What do you mean it's a beautiful wall? And they said, it is a beautiful wall, they said. Can't you see those two crooked bricks? Yes, they said. But I can also see the 998 good bricks. And of course, that was the story of the two bad bricks. Why is it you have a fault? Something goes wrong in your life? You have a mistake, a disaster, whatever. Why is it we only see the mistakes, we don't see bigger than that? That taught me something very important. In life, relationships, in work, whatever it is in life, why is it human beings always focus on what went wrong? And they don't actually stand back and look at the bigger picture of our life, the economy. It's going bad. What do you mean economy's going bad? There's trouble in this. What do you mean? You know this fellow, he did a brick wall later on, actually I helped him, did some of the bricks in our main hall. And we were talking about, oh, it's just, you know, sometimes, you know, there's more violence in these modern days. And he told me, that in the Depression years in London, he was working in London before the Second World War, as an apprentice bricklayer, this must be in 1928 or 29 or 30, sometime around then, he said the first thing he was taught on the building site was how to sew razor blades in the peak of his flat cap. So, if any police or anyone gave him any trouble, he would slash them with like hidden sharp edges. In many places in the east end of London were no-go areas for police. And that was actually how rough it was. So people who say these days, oh, just life is terrible these days, too many drugs and too much violence. Do you know what it was like some years ago? Sometimes we think, oh, the world's going, kids, we think, kids, they don't listen to the parents anymore. Did you ever listen to your parents? Oh yeah, we did in those days, really. So, I was a monk for many years. When I went to visit my brother, he had two kids, my niece and nephew, and you know what they call me? Of course, they call me Munkle. Come there, Uncle. You should have heard that one before. An uncle who's a monk becomes Munkle. So anyway, I don't know what my brother was up to, but I was talking to my niece and nephews. They were about 10 or 11 or 12 at the time. And I said, oh, what was our dad like when he was young? You know, because I was his younger brother. Oh, you know, this is what he did. And I started telling him all the bad things which my brother did when he was young. And that's when my brother came in. He said, you know, brother, what are you telling my kids? I'm trying to tell them to be good, and you're spoiling it all by saying that what I'm telling them to do, I never did when I was young. So sometimes the honesty is really good. So why is it we think that sometimes kids in the modern world are no good? Or they're bad, they don't listen to their parents. Of course they listen to their parents, but in a different way. Sometimes, but how? Why can't we look at life in a more positive way? And this is one of the things which I learned. It wasn't just wisdom teachings. It wasn't just being told to look at the world in another way, because sometimes I resisted that. We're talking about looking at the world, and what was it? You got climate change just going bananas, and you got violence, and you got terrorist groups all over the place, and you got the economy, you got people who are lying in high places. And sometimes, part of my Buddhist training, we used to learn how to read Pali, the old language of Buddhism, and read some of these stories which were in the old ancient texts. And one of the stories which I read was of a monk, it's in the time of the Buddha, was going on alms round, you know, in the morning taking your bowl, and people put food, rice or whatever in your bowl. And he would just go, you know, wherever, there was no real route which he would go on every day. And when he was wandering for alms food, he found himself behind the law courts, where he saw a person giving a huge sum of money to the judge. Corruption. In those days, 2,500 years ago. So there's some things don't change. They should change, we try and make them better, but then sometimes they get worse again. It is, we always tend to think, oh, the world is never like this, it's worse, it's gone bad these days. Sometimes I think it's pretty much the same. Even when I was a monk and I hadn't seen a newspaper for about 8 or 9 years. I didn't know what was going on in the world. And even the Times, you just didn't follow the calendars. There was no newspapers, there was no radio, there was no TV, obviously. And so sometimes, it was a case once, I honestly didn't know what year it was. I had to ask somebody, let alone the date or the month. We just follow the lunar calendar. I knew it when it was a rains retreat and when it was a hot season, a cold season, that sort of stuff, but nothing much else. So when I read this newspaper, well, actually somebody came up and told me, hey, have you heard, Ajahn Brahm, you know, your country that was England was at war with Argentina. That's a really funny joke. I couldn't believe it. There was actually a war, that Falklands War. I thought, this is crazy. So I got the newspaper and had a read of it, and I noticed something. The stories were the same as when I was a layperson. And the characters change. The countries, who's having a war with whom? Who's actually just having a scandal? Who's actually winning the soccer? Who is... have you ever noticed that? The news stories which you see. Characters change, but the main stories of people just following their defilements, pretty much always the same. So there's a sameness there. But there's also a lot of good and happiness there as well. So in order to overcome that negativity, the one thing which I did learn was emphasized by this time, already here in Australia, the time when I wasn't so busy as I am these days. I came back from some appointment, I'm not quite sure where it was, a beautiful spring morning, and I asked my driver, can you drop me off at the bottom of Kingsbury Drive? I want to walk up that hill this morning. plenty of time to get up the top there before lunch. And of course, you know, people, it's really weird, they don't like me to exercise. They say, oh no, maybe no, it's our good karma, we can actually take you up the top. You're taking off the opportunity for me to make good karma. So they said, no, I got out and I waved them on. And so I walked up that hillside. And this was the first time I walked up that hillside for almost 7 years. I'd always gone up in the car. But what happened, because I was going slowly, just walking, taking my time, a beautiful morning, the hillside was unrecognizable when I was going slowly, not in a rush, just walking peacefully. And that shook me. Why, in this hillside, I've been living up there for about 7 years, why does it now look totally different? It wasn't just different, it was more beautiful. The colors were clearer, and I saw more detail, which looked more attractive. And so it surprised me so much that I stopped. I stopped and stared. Kingsbury Drive, there's not much traffic goes up there, so I could just stand by the side of the road and just look. Well, I do remember one of the early stories though. One of our Anagarika's helpers, he went out for a walk along Kingsbury Drive once. This is our first few months, no one knew we were there. And so one of the prison officers from Carnet stopped by him and said, you're a long way from anywhere, son. He thought it was an escaped convict. And it took a long time for him to say, no, no, I live at the monastery. There is no monastery here. Yeah, it's in the monastery. So in those days, people didn't know who was living in that place. And then even sometimes they used to go out shooting kangaroos. And they say, be careful, monks, at that time of the year, because, you know, from a distance, kangaroos are brown. We look brown. Be careful. But anyway, just don't hop, okay? So anyway, well, first time going up that hill, first time in 7 years, and then I stopped. And that's where it looked even more beautiful than I'd ever imagined it could ever be. Even every blade of grass could be seen, and it was just so green. And just the little river, the creek in the bottom of the valley, you could see it just tumble over these rocks. Just the thousands of tiny waterfalls glistening in the morning sunshine. And the trees and the rocks with the lichen on it, the green lichen, it was just absolutely beautiful. And what shocked me was, how come I'd never seen that before? And the answer was, I'd always been going too fast. I was always going somewhere else. Up the road, down the road, somewhere else, talking to people in the car, giving directions, whatever it was. I'd never been going slow enough and stopped to see in a simple hillside how much beauty, clarity, and positive things to see were there. And it was also the case, just the scientist in me, we're just saying, well, you know, this is just the way the eye works. Now, the physical eye. When you see something quickly, light goes to the back of on the retina, and it's a chemical reaction. If you move somewhere else too quickly, another reaction interrupts the first one. The first one hasn't fully developed. I remember that because in science class, when I was a kid, you used to develop photographs. You take the photographs and you put them on the photographic paper and you put them in the solution, and it'll take a while before the image sort of came out on the photographic paper. And if you pulled it out too quickly, the image would not be fully developed. Leave it for a time and you can actually see the colors and the shapes emerge from the photographic paper. And that's what it was like in the back of your eye. And you stop and walk, you have more time. So you see more, of an image comes up. And you stop, stand perfectly still. And then what you see, wow, so much detail and so beautiful. And that opened up a whole avenue, a whole highway of insight into why people are negative. Why we don't see the beauty in the hillside where you go up and down so many times every week. Why you can't see all the incredible, wonderful, beautiful qualities in the people you live with, rushing past. Never pause to see. Never actually to value beautiful things in this planet Earth and life itself. We're too fast. And sometimes, if you ever get the opportunity to have a retreat down in Jhana Grove, one of the most pleasant things to do is lie on your back around these little stupas, these stone monuments, which this wonderful monk over in Jogjakarta just got his fellows to donate to us. And you, on a nice night, clear sky, you lay on your back and see the whole stars in the Milky Way. Because there's very little light pollution there. So clear, so beautiful. You don't need to see any sort of movie. It just captures your attention. You just don't try and explain anything. Sit in your back and let your mind be still and let the beauty just overwhelm you. It's always there. But why don't we notice it? Because we're running too fast. That overcomes negativity. I don't know, it's so easy to be negative to so much stuff. What don't you like? What's repulsive? What's abhorrent? You know what story's coming next, so you've heard me say this before. This is the most extreme. Well, I say this because it is absolutely true. On one retreat I was doing at Jhana Grove, meditation retreat, got so peaceful, really nice, and everything looks beautiful. You can't be negative and see the bad in anything. I mean, not in anything. Because I went to the loo to do a number two. I know that rhymes. But you know what I did? As soon as I went to the loo, and just, I checked on the contents of the toilet bowl afterwards. Absolutely true. In my whole life, I've never seen such a beautiful piece of shit. Next time, check it out. You don't know what you mean. You've got to have a peaceful mind and pause and have a look. It's not just one uniform shade of brown. It's many, many different shades. And it's just like it's like a piece of artwork. Just the way those different shades of brown sort of interact with each other. Because a lot of you know, art is just how the color sort of interacts, the relationship between the darkness and the lightness, and just the, then you get sort of the shape of it, the art form, like a sculpture, the way it's all put together. And then, of course, you got the aroma. No, why you're laughing? Because this is real, not fake stuff. You know, like scents and all this stuff they put in even in soap these days to make it smell good, or deodorants. This is actually honest. It's real. It's earthy, basic. It comes back to real nature. Nothing is added. It speaks just of just life itself. And so I was smelling it, just looking at its wonderful shape. And it's the most beautiful thing. And the thought did cross my mind. Let's take it out and show my friends. But I had enough restraint not to do that. But the hardest thing is only because, you know, you're a monk. And a monk, you know, you you give up possessions, you renounce, you know, you abandon, you don't hold on to things, no attachment. But it's pretty tough, I must say, pressing that little knob on the top. I can't do it. But I did. I pressed it. And the most beautiful T-U-R-D I'd ever seen went out of my life forever. It was almost like being overcome with grief and loss, losing something so beautiful. But what shocked me, all these things which you learn, you know, in life, was how come something so abhorrent, which people would just think you're crazy if you took that up and just put that on your desk and ask other people to want, why is something so repulsive look so beautiful? Why is something which is so negative could be appreciated and seen as something wonderful? And that gave me a good insight into where negativity comes from. Why we see life and see so much of life and judge it. If a piece of SHIT can look so beautiful, I'm sure that, here we go, Mr. Morrison, Mr. Shorten, Mr. Natale, all these other politicians can also be, ah, they're really just cute and cuddly. Can you see that? Your ex-partner? Ah, poor ex-partner. Well, they're not really that bad. You, yourself, look at yourself in the mirror. Does sometimes you think that you are at the same sort of level when you get really depressed and no self-esteem and no sort of consideration for any beautiful quality in you? Do you think that you are just at the same level as a piece of SHIT and need to be flushed down the toilet if you can even find one? Have you got such negativity and lack of self-worth? Sometimes people do. Which is why, when you just see the bad stuff, you just want to destroy it, get rid of it. Negativity. And sometimes we have a world where people always look at the bad stuff which happens. We look at the bad stuff which happens, cancers, diseases, accidents, I don't know, divorces. What's the divorce rate in Australia now? What's the point? We're going to die anyway. You know, we're saying this. Well, I didn't mention it. I think I just told this to the Thai people. We're just talking about, like, a vehicle for the Albany Monastery. And so, you know, we had this great idea. I don't know if anyone can find one and offer one. But actually, probably try it out at Bodhinyana Monastery first. You know, when my vehicle, which I'd really like to get for Bodhinyana Monastery, is a hearse. A funeral hearse. Because if you get a funeral hearse, number one, the police would never stop you for speeding or not wearing your safety belt. And going back, you know, after, you know, a full weekend, I could just go and take a nap, just go in the coffin in the back. Because apparently you're not allowed, if you have like a camper van or something, you're not allowed to actually to sleep in the back. Is that the law? In a caravan or something? But if you've got a hearse and you put in a nice box in there, I've actually seen those coffins, they're very comfortable. So imagine you can actually go in the back then have a good sleep. And you know, even like if you go to work and get caught in a traffic jam, you know, you can get your sort of your partner to do the driving. You can go and take a nap in the back while you're going to work. Isn't that a wonderful idea? And, you know, just when you're not using it yourself, you know, it's amazing. Amazing just how much money you pay for hearses if you do funerals. Because I've looked at those funeral bills which people do because I conduct funerals. And if you've got one, then it means that whenever any of you die, you can actually borrow a monastery vehicle for the ceremony. Would that be a good idea? Yeah, I thought it would be a good idea, but many of the drivers, especially if they're Asian, would refuse to drive it. Bad luck. But anyway, I always like to see things in a different way, a different light. But anyway, there we go. It's why is it we look at a hearse and think of it negative? Think of negative. Can't you see the positive in having an old hearse as your next vehicle? Parking? Would any sort of ranger, would they give a sticker to like a hearse? I think you'd probably be able to park it anywhere in Perth. Would you? Even here, because you can usually back it in here and get parking next to the Buddha. I've seen that bit. Anyway, if you look at positive sides of stuff, then it's amazing to see it opens up new angles of our life. In the UK, when I was young, they'd always have this in the north of England, they'd always have this saying, where there's muck, there's brass. I don't know if you understand that, where there's muck, there's brass. In other words, where there is negativity, abhorrent stuff or whatever, there is actually places where you can, you know, what they say, making money. Brass was like money. You can actually, but not sort of, I don't like the idea material stuff, but there's spiritual stuff where you can grow. So any place where there is negativity, there is always a place where you can get great wisdom, where you can actually see something much more deeper than ever before. It's one of the reasons negativity is just what we call growing pain. Negativity, when there's no hope, used to be like the fields, countryside, in the northern hemisphere at winter. You couldn't see any green leaves on the trees. There was nothing growing in the ground. Even the little animals were just all hibernating under the snow. But then it got warm. And then there was a big explosion of life. I just had a telephone call from Venerable Chanda in England. And she was just saying that just for days. It was just for months. It was just so grey and lifeless in the countryside. But now there's all these primroses and daffodils and crocuses just coming up. Where now did they come from? You might think. Now it's all green and bright and life. All coming from a time when you think there's nothing possible. When everything looks dead and hopeless. The wisdom sees much more than that. You may have lost an important person in your life. It's like the winter of life. But winters don't last. And after that winter, it comes incredible springs and the summertime when everything's going well again. Which is coming back to that old emperor's ring simile. It's all simile of just this ruler, very young. And so, as soon as he got power, he decided that it was his nature. When things went well in the kingdom, he'd have parties, celebrations. Wasted a lot of the taxes. Building stadiums and I shouldn't go there, should I? And celebrating. So you've spent so much time celebrating, so little time working, that the good times never lasted that long. They ran out of money in the boom times. And then when things went bad in the bust years, he got so depressed. So fault-finding. It's the previous government's fault. It's my wife's fault. It's my husband's fault. It's somebody's fault. He got so negative that he became depressed and couldn't do anything. Spent most of his days in his room, sulking, depressed, unproductive. Until the ministers, who are much older and wiser, they got, how can you actually teach someone who's in power, who won't be told, who thinks he knows better than everyone else? So they got this ring for the emperor. And that was the story of, this too will pass, because those are the words they engraved on the emperor's ring on the outside, this too will pass, and asked him to wear it. He didn't tell him what to do, the ring would keep reminding him that when things were going well in his life, he was happy and the economy was going well, he was popular and his football team were winning, when things were going well. What did he do? This too will pass. So that made him work hard, even in the good times. He never just took anything for granted. He had a good relationship. He didn't think, yeah, now we're married, we don't have to put any effort into our relationship. Still really cared and put lots of effort. Was healthy. I'm healthy now. Now the cancer's in remission. He doesn't have to worry anymore. Of course, he looked after his health. And his kids, yeah, they're going well at school. Keep making sure the school is not one term. Keep on going. So knowing the instability and changeability would always work. This too will pass. And when things went bad in his life, when he was sick, this too will pass. As Ajahn Chah famously said to me in hospital, when I was really sick, Ajahn Brahm, well actually it wasn't Ajahn Brahm then, Brahma Wangso, he said, you'll either get better or you'll die. That was his way of saying, it will pass. Thank you very much. Great wisdom, but bedside manner was terrible. But, you know, it does pass. So when things were going badly, you kept on working, never got depressed, because you know it does pass. It never stays. That gives whatever negativity you're in, whatever depression, whatever pain, whatever difficulty you find yourself in life, it passes. You know that. So you keep on working. You never think it's the end. And that's one of the reasons why there's a monk, I don't know how many years in this place, already mentioned, 83, what's the year now? 36 years been working in this place. Yeah, sometimes you have difficulties, but it passes. Sometimes things are going well, and it passes. So, that keeps you positive. No need for negativity. And when you have things like that, of course, there's a great deal of strength and energy. You can be of service to others. So you look at people who are depressed, going through difficult times. You know it passes. But in order to see the beauty in a piece of shit, the beauty in difficulties, the beauty in people who are giving you a hard time, that is where, instead of running away, you stop. Instead of trying to escape, you are peaceful. And what you see, when you become peaceful and still, when you stop fighting, but just be there and look your suffering in the eye, as it were, is not what you expect. What you see becomes more and more beautiful and fragrant and delicious, which really surprises you. Finishing off with that saying of William Blake, to see a world in a grain of sand. Something insignificant which people don't even pause. See a heaven in a wild flower. Not in a big flower which you have you know, behind you over here. I'm allergic to flowers. So when people were asking in the committee meeting last time, you know, can we, what type of flowers do you like, Ajahn Brahm? Because I know, you know, especially last week when I had a cough and a cold, and so can we actually help? I said, yeah, one type of flower which I would like behind me on the shrine, well, which never makes me allergic, cauliflower. I thought you maybe get some for the cauliflower on the shrine. Maybe get one next week. Anyway, to see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven and a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand. That's a great saying. Infinity. Where are you looking for infinity? Out there in space, out there in the wisdom of bald-headed, brown-robed monks and nuns, in books. Where are you going to find infinity? Right here. You've got it if you can only stop and see. The beauty in an old hillside, which I never thought I'd ever see like that. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. Forever, endless. And I've been talking almost an hour now. But my teaching does have an end, and the end is here. It's nigh. It's come. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so any questions, I'm sure. Any questions about negativity? How many of you didn't like that talk? Then you're being negative. Oh. Okay, so anyway, what questions have we got from the machine? Very good. Here we go, 1, 2, 3. USA, USA, Germany. It is sometimes tempting to let negativity serve as an unwholesome source of energy. For example, anger providing a momentary high. How can one come to truly comprehend the danger of it? First of all, it doesn't last. It's so easy to get angry. I remember going at angry protests. We should do something. Down with the... And then you can add whatever you want to be down with. And you do get a rise in energy. But you pay for that afterwards. And sometimes you can see the attraction in negativity. And that best example was The Life of Brian. That great movie. It was actually a documentary. At least that's what I looked at it as. The documentary where it was the Palestine Liberation something army or whatever, and led by John Cleese, down with the Romans. What have the Romans ever done for us? And somebody put their hand up, well, actually they gave sanitation. You know, it was really, you know, smelly in this place, lots of diseases. Oh yeah, you've got to give them that, they give sanitation. What did the Romans do for us other than sanitation? Roads. You know, it took forever to get anywhere in those old days, and, you know, all the wheels were broken. They gave us roads, they're great engineers. Yeah, okay, we'll give them that. What are the Romans, you know, this they were sort of colonizing this part of the world. What have they done other than roads and water? Running water? Now, sometimes you have to go down the well to get water, now it comes straight to you. Oh, yeah, okay, water. What else have they done? Law and order? Oh, some parts of that, you know, Jerusalem, you wouldn't want to go down there late at night, you'd get robbed and beaten up and maybe killed. No law and order now. What else? Yeah, education? Yeah, education. So I had a whole list of things which they'd done. Until the end, he said. But what have they done for us other than law and order and education and roads and safety and water and sanitation? Nothing! Nothing! Down with the Romans! And that was a wonderful little example of like negativity. Focusing on the what people haven't done rather than what you have done. What does that mean in real life? What has my husband ever done for me? Nothing, nothing. Out with my husband. And you don't think of all the wonderful things they've done. What has my wife done? So actually that's You know, that's so close to the bone sometimes. You say it in as like a funny little anecdote, but it's so true. Sometimes when we look at our negativity, and that can just break up our relationships, break up our family, even break up our own relationship to ourselves. What have I ever done for me? Nothing. Nothing. So that's where we get depressed. So this is one of the reasons why that negativity, you can see when you get into that, you can get angry, but that anger takes energy. And that sucks energy out until you've just got no energy left, and that's called depression. Angry people, you go from, what is it, anger to sort of frustration. Why can't people understand? Why can't they do something? And from anger to frustration, and then what's the point? That's where you get depression. What's the point? And that's the danger there. Anger goes to that. Anyway, from another one from USA, does negativity mean chasing after goals, and how do you balance letting go with the middle part to live a positive life? Negative chasing after goals, what are you chasing after? When you realize, there was one gentleman here, he said, oh, he wanted to get me some carrot juice, but he couldn't find any carrots. And I told him about, oh, don't chase after carrots. Just a simile of the donkey. The carrot comes to you. The donkey and the carrot simile? The only way you can get a donkey to pull the cart is not hit it with a stick, because donkeys are stubborn. So, tie the stick to the back of the donkey's neck, so the front of the stick is 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, string on the end of the stick, and a carrot in front of the donkey's mouth. The donkey sees a carrot. So what does donkey do? It likes carrots, so it moves towards the carrot. As the donkey moves towards the carrot, so does the stick, so does the string, so does the carrot. So the donkey is always chasing after the goal of the delicious carrot. What are you chasing after? Do you ever actually, just you can see it, you can smell it, the perfect relationship, the perfect job, happiness, the perfect meditation, whatever it is, you get so close to it, so close, and you move a little bit towards it and it goes away from you. You never catch it. That's life. Your boss giving the perfect job, the opportunity, you go for it and it moves away from you. Happiness, rest, the perfect monastery, the perfect attendant. Almost get one, and then they just go off and start their own monastery somewhere. So what? That's like chasing the carrot. So how does a donkey ever get the carrot? It's quite obvious when you see it. Donkey runs after the carrot. You've been running after all your goals in life. What happens? You just get tired. You don't actually get carrots. Almost. You go your whole life chasing for something. But the Buddhist donkey, the one who knows how to meditate, knows how to stop. The donkey stops. When that donkey stops, what happens to the carrot? You're not chasing goals anymore. Carrot goes away from you. Things get worse. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here. And the carrot goes so far away, 4 foot in front of donkey's mouth, and then it starts to swing towards you. For the first time in your life, you're just sitting there, and now the goal is coming towards you. And soon it's 2 foot in front of you, the normal place, going so fast, fast as it's ever coming, but going towards you. And it comes so close to you, and you just wait. You always have to remember one of the most important teachings in Buddhism, compassion. At the very end, when the carrot is almost at the donkey's teeth, the donkey has to remember, carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Come in. Otherwise, the carrot bounces off the donkey's teeth. So, the last bit, compassion. let it come in. And that's how the donkeys actually, that's how you get goals in life. You've been chasing after them already. Stop. Relax. Make peace. Don't move. And the goal, the real goals, the one you've really been chasing, comes towards you. Anyway, Germany, how to overcome negativity due to a lung operation. One of the first things, don't listen to any of my talks, because if you start laughing, that must really hurt at a lung operation. Just like that lady, she had a hysterectomy. You know, and that was just, you know, it was a very difficult operation for a woman. So, you know, emotionally and psychologically. So she asked, please, can you come and visit me? So I went there. And first thing she said when I went into her room, Ajahn Brahm, please don't tell any jokes. And of course that just encouraged me. Because every time she laughed, it really hurt. So anyway, so due to a lung operation, just, you know, make sure you don't listen to any of my stupid jokes. Uncertain future and present chronic pain. Uncertain future, who knows what might happen? And I know many people, because I've lived long enough now, who should be dead years ago. But they're not. Still alive. Still breathing. And just the doctors, I don't know what you're doing. Well, was there that fellow over, good old George, I haven't seen him for a while, but many years ago, you know, he had stage 4 lung cancer, went to see the oncologist. You know, the oncologist showed the x-ray, whatever it was. Both lungs totally sort of, with the cancer. And that time they said, well, George, you know, we can give you chemotherapy. You can't do surgery because you have to take everything out. No lungs left. Or we can actually do chemotherapy, maybe radiation therapy. But, you know, in my opinion, he said, maybe we'll keep you alive another month or two at most. He said, go back home, talk it over with your wife, come back and let me know how you feel. So he talked over his wife. Obviously, now just for an extra couple of months' life, going through all that difficulty, he came back and said, well, it is my choice, so just let nature take its course. And the doctor, oncologist, insisted on doing another x-ray, and then went into the room, and the doctor was looking at the new x-ray. I remember George telling me, the doctor was shaking his head. And George said, okay, come on, tell me, doctor, you know, just, I'm prepared. It's got worse, hasn't it? How many days have I got left? And that's when the doctor looked up from the x-ray and said, George, I'm shaking my head, not because it's got worse. I'm shaking my head because it's disappeared. What the hell have you been doing, George? And he said, meditating. Carry on. It was a true story. Well, it doesn't work for everybody, but who knows? It's a wonderful thing about life, the uncertainty of it. Which means nothing is fixed in concrete. You never know what might happen next. Present chronic pain. There's a little story in Opening the Door of Your Heart about, what was it called again? It's Too Much to Hope For by Jonathan Wilson Fuller. And you have a read of that. The reason I, with permission, reproduced it in that first book I wrote, Opening the Door of Your Heart, over in Germany, it's Der Kuh der Weinte, the Cow That Cried book. In the US, it's Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung? Different, same title, same book inside, but different titles. And that was a beautiful story. And the reason I put it in there, because Jonathan Wilson Fuller, he had chronic pain. He was 11 years of age when he wrote this incredibly inspiring little story about chronic pain. About its meaning and its purpose. So if you haven't got that yet, please get it out and read it. You know, you can find it, if this is from Germany, in the bookshop, Der Kuh der Weinte, you can probably find it online. And sometimes, how on earth can an 11-year-old just have such incredible wisdom? It was because he had to. He's allergic to the 21st century, I think it said. And he had to. He said, what's the purpose of this? Just pain when you put your foot on a thorn put your finger in the fire, you can understand the purpose of that, but chronic pain, which is always there. But it has got a purpose. It is a purpose of knowing that you can live life in spite of the pain. You can have happiness with the pain, not apart from it. It's a victory, a special victory, an experience which only those who've had chronic pain can know. It's very personal, very wonderful. He said, that's its meaning. I'm not giving justice to the poem, but please have a look at it. It's on the Opening the Door of Your Heart book, Jonathan Wilson Fuller, 11 years of age. As soon as I read that, it just blew me away. A kid like that could understand. And it gives hope, meaning. So anyway, there we go. Any other questions from the audience here before we finish off? Negativity and how we can see a world in a grain of sand. Heaven in even a piece of shit. And when you do that, negativity, it has a meaning. It turns it into positivity. Okay. So now we're going to pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. You're most welcome to join in. And then afterwards, if you need to come up for a question or whatever, most welcome.